The following is a part of the Radio Memphis On Demand service. It originally aired live on Radio Memphis and has been edited for time.
This is that part where I was telling you guys that I have some really crazy cool stuff that's coming down the pike. And you know that, you know, at some point, sometimes I'll do this stuff that's called the Radio Memphis Road Crew Radio Series. And it's with Ken Barr and Ken Barr Films. And what we did was we wound up gathering a bunch of different people, you know, from behind the scenes, you know, and talking about, you know, tips and tricks, you know, and stuff like that in reference to those that actually make things happen, make shows happen, support the artists and stuff. Well, that rabbit hole led me to some really cool people and led me to some really cool moments. And one of the things that it led me to was a gentleman that I'm getting ready to talk to you guys, talk to right now. I'm going to share that conversation with you guys right here. And it's important because you guys know everything about what I do. I'm always trying to share stuff, especially for our unsigned and our indie artists about, you know, some insight, you know, and some, you know, some direction and, you know, some things that, you know, you to consider. And what better way than to talk to somebody who's definitely been around the block. Now, so some of you may not realize who I'm talking about. And I'm actually talking about Mr. Bob Emmer. Now, he is the co-chief executive officer and co-founder of the video music company, Shout Factory. Okay. And he is, you know, he's done a ton of different stuff. You know, Shout Factory in and of itself is a big, massive conglomerate of a lot of crazy cool stuff. We're definitely going to get into it and talk to him about that. But what we also know about him is that he's had relationships and, you know, and career moments and stuff with people like Rhino Entertainment as its executive vice president, as well as senior vice president and business affairs to Warner Music Group. Okay. We're talking about record labels like Elektra, Warner Brothers, Atlantic, you know, Rhino Entertainment, you know, all this. But also more importantly, and you guys are going to figure out the connection here, okay, is that he has also had his time as senior vice president, creative and business affairs with Alive Enterprises. Yes, enter in everybody else that you guys know that I've been able to talk to. Now, Alive Enterprises, it being, you know, just a multifaceted entertainment management production company, you know, when he did that stuff, he was able to do early in his career assist in commercial development for a ton of musical talent. Think Alice Cooper, okay, if you guys haven't figured out the hint. Okay, people like Blondie, Teddy Pendergrass, a ton of stuff. But see, one of the reasons why it was very important to me that I talked to him was that he not only has he done all of this over his career, he was also the executive producer and the creator of the NBC late night music show Rock and Roll Tonight. And if you guys know nothing about Rock and Roll Tonight, okay, was a live, this legendary show, and it was on for a season and a half. It was a live TV broadcast that broke some of the top acts of the 80s, okay? You're thinking like Scandal, Billy Squire, all this. And, you know, this was all done in a very, very true indie spirit, especially, you know, that Radio Memphis loves, okay? So with no further ado, I actually have Mr. Bob Emmer on the phone. How are you doing, Bob?
I'm doing fine. I can't wait to listen to the interview.
I'm excited. Look, man, I tried to shorten it because I knew you were on hold. I left a lot of stuff out. Thank you, man. Thank you so much for spending some time with me and talking with me. You are an absolute gem. You are such a sweet man.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I'm that way because of the people that I've been involved in.
Oh, wow.
And if there's anything that can come out of this today to anybody out there listening, it's know where you're going. Stay on that path. Don't let anybody dissuade you. And surround yourself with mentors. Surround yourself with people that give off a positive vibe, that support you in what you're doing. Because there's a lot of naysayers down the road. I could give you stories on everybody that's a success and everybody in that group. I've been told,
wow,
there's no way you're going to succeed. Okay.
Wow.
So when you hear that, just keep going.
And you just keep rolling on with it, and you keep going out of it and after it. You know, just to kind of, Bob, just to kind of give everybody kind of an idea, like currently right now, because I'm going to do this kind of weird for a second, and I'm going to quickly work backwards, you know, because
I'm
going to get weird on you, man. You obviously know Shout Factory. Okay. You know, you've got a couple of gentlemen that, you know, you guys, you know, pretty much founded this particular company. And can you kind of tell everybody what, because Shout Factory is so huge and it's so big and it does so much stuff. Can you encompass it, you know, in a couple of statements as far as what you're doing?
Sure. When, you know, this all goes back to the theme of independence. Okay?
Yes.
And the independent spirit. I had two partners two partners had me. Let me get that straight. They were founding partners.
Nice.
And we had Rhino Records. We built this into a large company, and we sold it. And we sold it to the Warner Music Group, and it was wonderful.
Wow.
I mean, we had a great relationship. I had the pleasure of expanding my relationships with one of my heroes and idols, Ahmet Erdogan, who was the founder of Atlantic Records.
Right.
And just unbelievable. But
wow.
Anyway, once that happened, it's like, okay, what's next? What's the next chapter? Well, for me, the next chapter was I was enticed to stay in a corporate position at the Warner Music Group as head of business affairs.
Okay.
I must tell you that corporate has never been my forte.
Really?
Not because I'm anything against it. I think it's a necessary aspect. It just doesn't fit who I am.
I'm
an independent.
Okay.
But anyway, it went well for a while. A new regime came in. I was not moving from L.A. to New York, and we negotiated an exit package for me that allowed me to start Shout Factory with one of the founding members of Rhino Records, Richard Foose, who was not too happy. Happy is not the right word. Let me rephrase that.
Hmm.
Who was not satisfied with what his position or role would be at Rhino under the new the new setup, the new regime, along with his brother Garson Foose, who is our head of marketing at Rhino, and we decided, you know, we're going to start another company. There needs to be another independent.
Okay.
And what would be the next chapter? And for us, the next chapter, we saw what was changing in the landscape of music.
Perfect.
And we said we could take those core competencies that we have developed in the music reissue and veneration, if you will, of pop culture, and move it 50% into music and 50% into audiovisual.
Okay.
Which would include classic television, classic horror, children's, whatever it was, but repositioning IP, intellectual property, into this area.
Sure.
Here it is 15 years later. We're a hugely successful independent in this space.
There you are.
And I would say that probably less than 10, I can say with authority, less than 10% of our business is music. And people have asked me, why did you abandon music? And my response is, I did not abandon
music. No, you didn't.
Music as a business model, the way we were doing music, had abandoned us. It had moved on. So therefore, needing to capitalize on the opportunities that were out there, those were the opportunities in more of the classic TV cult, acquiring intellectual property in a very interesting way, such as, and we can get into it or not, but Mystery Science Theater 3000.
Yes, I saw that.
Which is a 30-year cult favorite, or recently acquiring the New Horizons Pictures catalog from Roger and Julie Corman, which are known as the most fiercely independent film company ever to have graced this planet.
That's perfect. And you know, and for those of you that are tuned in, I'm talking to Mr. Bob Emmer, Shout Factory. And look, the cool thing about...
Do me a favor.
Mm.
The mister. I know I'm old, but that really makes me feel older.
You know...
Just call me Bob.
You know, all right, darling. Bob, how about that? That'll work. I won't do that to you. You know what's funny about the thing with music and what you do now? I also know, because you were talking about, you know, the Mystery Science Theater and stuff, and I was reading, you know, about, you know, some of the things that you guys were, you know, doing and revamping and stuff. But a lot of people, what's really funny is that there's a lot of wheels that are going on in the background, okay? And not only are you stoking as far as the pop culture and everything else, but you're also taking this. You guys are also taking all of this stuff, and you're also creating new content. You know, and you guys are also creating new opportunities, you know.
Yeah.
And in turn, at some point, you know, they said music, you know, music is still a thing. And one of the things that was always so awesome for me about pop culture is that those people knew how to marry those two things together when you talk about audio, visual, and music. You know what I mean? Because you knew what was going to sell a moment. And so... what better way than for the you guys that have been through the ranks and been through the moments and stuff to know what's going to sell and know what's going to sound good, right?
Well, we think we know. I mean, we've been right a good percentage of the time, and we've been wrong. But, you know, this is what I would encourage anybody out there listening that wants to embark on a career.
Sure.
Mistakes are almost as important as successes, yeah, as long as you can learn from those mistakes.
Right.
And we spend a lot of time at the company analyzing the mistakes and saying, why didn't this work? Why did we think this was going to do X and it only did Y? Why?
Why?
Okay. And when you learn from that, you can move forward into other exciting things. There's no such thing as an entrepreneur. There's no such thing as, you know, this project was a failure. It's just an opportunity to learn. However, you know, that old adage, once learned, twice burned.
Right.
That's true. Don't make the same mistake again twice. But as long as you can learn from the mistake, there's a lot of benefit from that.
There's a ton of benefit from that. Well, I guess my thing also, too, is because, you know, Bob, you've seen, you know, so much, you know, over the course of time, and you've seen industry rise, fall, rise again. You've seen platforms change. You know, you've seen a lot of, you know, some crazy things. Every time, though, there's such a cool, you know, such an independent spirit about who you are and what you do. And you just explained, because that's who you are. You know, why is that? You know, what is it that just made you feel like, you know, you didn't want to be caged in? You felt like you wanted to have, you know, ample opportunities and choices.
I think part of that is the duality of my personality, if you will.
Sure.
I'm also a lawyer, which tends to put me in a box. Like,
it does.
You know, it's like, you can't be a creative. And I have a creative side too. So, you know, I live in two worlds. I would have, if I could relive my life and do what I wanted to do, but I could not do, I would have loved to have been a music artist, okay?
I would
but
love
I
that.
I tried so hard to even learn how to play an instrument, and there was definitely a deficiency in me. I could not do it, okay?
Aww.
And I have a lousy voice. You don't even want me to start singing.
Oh, stop
even
it.
Even in the shower, I think I get people turned off.
Oh, stop.
My wife turned off. But the point being, I assessed that, and I said, okay, if I can't do this, an artist, and I can't do that, what can I do that could keep me close to the music?
I see.
And to me, that was become somewhat on the business side. You know, and that's when, you know, I had the great opportunity and the great good fortune of hooking up with Shep Gordon and Alive Enterprises.
There it is.
For those of you out there that don't know anything about history and Shep or history of music, if you're into music, as I tell a lot of the people that work with me.
Sure.
If you don't know the history, if you don't know where it's been, you have no effing clue where it's going.
That's okay? Perfect.
Learn about the past.
Thank you.
The past is not so much that it repeats itself, but there's a lot to be learned from that.
I am so glad you said this.
I'm sorry.
No, I'm just because you know, it's funny because every time I talk, and I always talk tips and tricks and lessons and stuff, you know, one of my things, I'm always like, and I always tell everybody, hashtags like your band is your brand and your brand is your business, one. But then also, right, two, I have this thing about, you know, the past, and I have about, you know, the people that have gone before, and I say the same things. It was, you know, and that me myself, I mean, I still learn every day something. Like I'm going to be learning something from you today. I already know this, you know,
I hope so, and I'll learn from you.
Thank you.
But going back, so I had the good fortune of winding up to work with Shep for six and a half years, and he was a great mentor. He was a great teacher. A lot of my principles that I put to work today are a byproduct of what I learned when I was with Shep. For those of you out here that don't know who he is, you have two opportunities to learn about him, and I suggest you try both opportunities. One is, there's a great documentary that was done by Mike Myers, mini-me, if you will, on Shep Gordon, Supermensch, and it's all about Shep and his relationship with the artistic community, especially with music artists.
Yes.
And then there's actually a book out called Shep Gordon, Supermensch.
Yes.
Which is different than the film, and you can learn from both. And I, you know, it's just, I was blessed to have that opportunity. I've had a couple others with some other legendary people involved in music.
Right.
And each time I've been able to learn from them.
That's what, you know, Bob, what would you have considered were your first break? You know, what was your first real break?
First break was I needed to date women. Okay. So
yes.
That being the invention of a necessity, if you will.
Right.
I was undergraduate student at I was an undergraduate journalism major.
Okay.
At the University of Southern California, USC.
Nice.
I do not come from a wealthy background. That I would say lower middle class at best, depending on what year you were looking at our socioeconomic rating, if you will.
Right.
And SC happened to be a very upscale school with plenty of eligible women to date.
Okay.
But to date, you needed money. I mean, you had to take them out.
I had no money. Dinner.
But I was a journalism major, so I put the two necessities together and said, wait a minute. If I became the first music editor, because the paper definitely needed a music editor, I get tickets to go to the concert.
Yeah.
I could take you to a concert.
Nice.
So that worked, except there was another missing element.
Which was?
And that was, you got to take them out to a dinner before or after the show.
There
was no food critic. So I became the first food critic and music editor at the USC Daily Trojan. You want to go out, we're going to have a nice dinner either before or after the show, and then we're going to go see the show. And to me, all I had to do was write about it. And that really was my big break.
That is fantastic. Oh, my goodness. And way to work it to your advantage. And, of course, those young ladies must have thought you were quite the rock star.
I don't know what they thought, but that was the end. And then the next element that takes us take a couple minutes to explain.
Sure.
The next element based off of that is what got me in the music business. I was still intent on dating girls, feeding them, having a good time, becoming a journalist. Okay.
Yeah.
I had no intention of working in the music business.
Okay.
And then what happened was I became the editor of the entertainment section of the paper, and my big break came to maybe somebody out there knows, and if they could find him, I'd love to take him to dinner, my guest, because he is the true reason I got in the business.
Okay.
I handed this new record. All the record labels would give us albums to review.
Right.
And my job was to find somebody to review it. I'm not reviewing all the albums.
Okay.
And I gave this gentleman, Mike Mitchell. Mike, if you're out there or anybody knows him.
Okay.
I'm 67, so he'd be about my age.
Okay.
USC graduate. Was in the journalism school. Put him in touch with me.
Okay.
Just get in touch with Radio Memphis and they'll find me. Anyway, I give Mike Mitchell the album, and he basically says it's the biggest piece of crap he's ever heard. And you know what the album was?
Oh my God.
Carole King's Tapestry.
Stop it.
One of the greatest albums ever recorded.
Stop it.
And what happened was I got a call from A&M Records, from the college rep. I didn't even know there was such a thing as a college rep. And he called me, he said, how dare you review this album? This is going to be one of the greatest albums of all time. Blah, 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 blah. And I said, you know what? I agree with you. I think it's a great album. But this is freedom of the press. And I know that's being challenged these days by the current administration. But there is such thing as freedom of the press. And you say what you believe, and it's just a review. I said, he has the right to say that. I disagree with him vehemently. But he said it. He said, I don't really care. You'll never get another record from A&M again.
Oh.
And that's what triggered my response. I was indignant to that, okay?
Oh.
How dare you? And I did some research and found out A&M Records stood for Herb Alpert, and the M stood for Jerry Moss. They were fiercely independent records.
Yep, they sure were.
Herb Alpert happened to have gone to Fairfax High School, and I was a graduate of Fairfax High
School. Imagine that.
So I called A&M Records the next day and asked to be connected to Mr. Alpert's office. And I got a very lovely assistant. I told the story. She said, you know what? This really doesn't merit Mr. Alpert's getting involved. You need to speak with Lance Freed, who is the son of Alan Freed.
Really?
This turns out to be, for those of you out there that don't know Alan Freed, I'm not going to give you the answer. Look it up. Okay. I'll just say one word. Rock and roll, Alan Freed.
Okay.
Anyway, Lance Freed gets on the phone. He said, Bob, I hear what you're saying. Don't worry about it. You'll get records next year because the college rep is graduating. And here comes the key words he said. I'm in the process of hiring a new college rep. And I heard the word hiring.
Okay.
I said, what do you mean hiring? He goes, well, we pay $35 a week and give the guy records to get him, you know, distributed to the college campuses, and I need a new college rep for California.
Wow.
I said, look no further. I'm your guy. He said, come in tomorrow and interview. I got the job, and that's how I never got out of the record business.
That is so funny. All because of that one guy. That is so fantastic.
Yeah, so there's another example of, you know, something negative turning into a massive positive. If he'd given it a great review, I'd probably be a journalist today and probably raise my hand at a press conference. And President Trump would probably say, oh, you're with fake news. Next question.
And you wouldn't have anything to say to him, right? You know, so that door opens and then it turns into something for you.
It kept snowballing.
And this is how you meet people, and this is how you get to interact, and this is, you know, one thing led to another. And, you know, when you and I got to spend some time on the phone, and for those of you who tuned in, you're talking to Bob Emmer right here on Radio Memphis. When we got to spend some time on the phone, you know, and I told you that, you know, I spent some time, you know, and I know a little bit about what you had going on, and you know, one of the romances for me of seeing where you've been was the show that you wound up, you know, creating and producing and putting on TV. And there's a lot that goes into what led up to actually putting out Rock and Roll Tonight, you know, on NBC.
Well, yeah, that's another interesting story. I have so many great interesting stories.
I know.
Several people said to me, you got to sit down and put it down in a book.
You do.
And I said, no, there's absolutely no way. The only way, if I keep these stories to myself, I get to tell them to people.
Oh, okay.
And I much prefer that than writing them down and then being, I don't know, whatever the word. I like telling them.
Good.
It makes me feel good.
Good.
It's a selfish thing.
It's okay. I'm be selfish.
I want to be selfish.
Be selfish. Be very selfish.
Tonight, here's what happened.
Yeah?
There's the rise of a network called MTV when it was all music.
Right.
And actually, Shep and I produced several concerts for MTV in its infancy. We did Journey from Houston Summit venue. We did Dwight Twilley. We did Dave Mason live in concert from Perkins Palace. I think a couple other. But to be honest with you, we never really loved the concept of a music video.
Yes.
Because the reason being, and I may sound very old with this, but music to me is personal.
Yes.
You listen to a song, any great song, I don't care what it is. It could, you know, name a great song. You listen to it, I listen to it, somebody else listens to it. We all, in our minds, come up with our interpretation of the song. What does that mean to me?
Right.
What do I see or hear when I hear that song?
Right, right.
And the minute they came up with this concept of a music video, that was gone. Because if I'm listening to, I don't know, I can't even remember the songs back then, but if I'm listening to a song and there's a girl crawling on all fours and there's a guitar player,
yep,
and she's idolizing him, that's what the music is.
That's it.
I can't visualize anything else. They told me what it is.
They told you, and you didn't have an opinion.
I dictated what it is. I didn't like that.
That's true.
Jeff and I talked about that along with a great, great partner on this project, Neil Marshall, who was the producer of a late night rock and roll show called Midnight Special and Rock and Midnight Special.
Yep.
And we came up with this idea that let's try to sell a late night show that would only feature musical artists performing live. They do like three or four songs. It would be just like a concert. We'd have three or four artists.
Right.
We'd have no host. It would be a voice, like an FM voice. You would have been a great voice.
No,
for it.
Thank you. Thank you.
Weren't around then. Welcome to Rock and Roll Tonight. And you would hear who was on.
Right.
And then there was a special thing we created in the show called the Magic Moment.
Oh.
And that was whoever was the number one artist on the show, who was the headliner, if you will.
Sure.
They got to tell us what their rock and roll fantasy was. What would they like to do?
Oh.
And we would help them create that live on the show, live to be recorded.
That is so insanely crazy. Show,
you know, it was Billy Squier was the headline act. He said he wanted to jam with Jeff Beck. We contacted Jeff Beck. Jeff Beck said, I'll do it, but I love this concept. I want to jam. Can we have a third person join the jam? Because I've always wanted to jam with Les Paul.
Oh, my goodness.
This is even before Les Paul had his resurgence. So we contacted Les Paul, and he was flabbergasted. You mean you're going to fly me to L.A., and you want me to play with Jeff Beck and whoever this Billy Squire is? He had no idea who he was.
Wow.
And we said yes, and that was on the first show. And if you guys out there and gals listening want to see some great live performances of some great artists, some of them, it was their debut, like Boy George. He had never performed
just,
in the United States.
He just played. Boy George,
you
just
go on YouTube. Most of them are up on YouTube.
That's funny because Boy George just played last night here in Memphis, sold out.
Who did?
Boy George.
Boy George?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Sure did.
The first show with him. And this was 30 years ago. But here comes the great point. How do you sell a show? I know somebody out there is asking. You don't just go to NBC and say, let's put this up.
No.
Sell it.
You don't. So how do you?
You have to go sell it. So we put together what they call a sizzle reel, which is highlights of what the show would look like.
Right.
And now we have to go out and sell it. We're going to go visit various networks, network executives, and say, here's what we got. Does this fit something you want? And let's negotiate a deal. So we engaged with the William Morris Agency at the time.
I see.
And they were very, very astute about this. They said, you know what? We're going to take one or two dry run meetings. We're going to go to networks that probably have no interest in this.
Okay.
But we're going to hear what your pitch is. We're going to then hear how you're presenting it, and we're going to take notes, and then we're going to go back and we're going to refine it. Because you get one shot.
Wow.
Sounded good to us. Okay. So the first meeting we had was at NBC O&O. Now, we were an independent syndicated show. O&O's mean owned and operated.
Okay.
Every network can control only a handful of stations in so many markets. The rest are affiliates, which they have no real control over.
Right.
NBC O&O's were all the major markets, L.A., New York, Chicago, Detroit. So if you could clear the O&O's for an NBC or any, you were in 75% of the United States. That was your footprint to start. Then you just had to fill in the holes.
Wow.
But as William Morris said, this is never going to happen. Just go in there and let's see what happens. So we go in there and meet with the head of O&O station, a gentleman by the name, another like Mike Mitchell, okay? A guy who's my hero who would never have been my hero. I by the name of Wes Harris.
Okay.
And Wes Harris at the time, I'm sure, I shouldn't even say this, I don't even know if he's with us anymore because he was definitely in his 60s, okay?
Okay.
And he looked like a hard-drinking Irishman.
Nice. You know? Huh.
And heavy, sitting behind the desk. And okay, you know, we have nothing to lose here. We have actually nothing to gain. This is just a dry run. And sure enough, just as William Morris predicted, 5 minutes into the presentation, he says, stop this. Stop it. He leans across the desk. He says, I have no idea what you're talking about or what your concept is. But I also had no idea what the concept was behind Saturday Night Live. And I have an opening after Saturday Night Live. So if you'd like, you got it. You're clear.
You're kidding.
I swear to God. You can't. This is what legendary stories are. That's what happened.
That's awesome.
The guy who didn't like rock and roll, didn't understand it, but knew, smart enough to know that the people watching Saturday Night Live, which he didn't even embrace, but it was such a success, are the same people that'll stay up another hour and a half to watch Rock and Roll Tonight.
See? And that's just the thing. That's the thing about Rock and Roll Tonight. I mean, these were guys and gals that were coming in, and you were, you know, this is their debut. They wound up being some of the most iconic, you know, artists, you know, especially, you know, as far as for the 80s. And this is their moment, and this is their break. You know, was that the intentions also of Rock and Roll Tonight?
Yeah, that was some of it. Some of them were established artists, and some of them we had to convince. NBC had final approval over who the guests were.
Oh, okay.
And I got a call again. I mean, this is another lesson. I'll try to impart to people.
Okay.
And that is relationships, relationships, relationships.
There it is.
You know, in real estate, they all talk about location, location, location. In the entertainment business, it's relationships, relationships, relationships.
Yes, it
so
is.
So I had a relationship with a label head and a manager named Spencer Proffer.
Okay.
And Spencer had just started a new label, Posture Records. And he signed a band, Quiet Riot.
Imagine that.
And he came to me, he goes, I want you to feature this band. I said, they got nothing going. They don't even have a release yet. He said, call anybody you want at Sony. I'll give you the test pressing. They're going to support this record. This will be a hit by the time you come out. I said, as a friend, I will do what I can, but NBC has final approval.
Right.
NBC said, who is this band? We can't even find them anywhere. I then went in and said to NBC, I've got it on very, very good authority that this will be a hit. They're going to put everything behind it. And I've listened to the test pressing, and there's a song there, Come On, Hear the Noise.
Oh, my goodness.
It's a friggin' hit.
Oh, my goodness.
Let's go.
Wow.
They said, okay, we'll give you this one shot, but don't fail. By the time we aired the show, which is usually several weeks to a couple months after you record it.
Sure.
The record was in the top 10.
Oh, my.
I was a hero.
My goodness.
And I was a hero because I believed in my friend Spencer, who believed in his band, and you take those chances. That's what it's about.
That's exactly what it's about. Do you ever, you know, Bob, did you ever come across, though, that one artist, and as soon as you heard it, you know, you just, not somebody bringing it to you, but do you ever come across somebody and you're just like, oh my God. You know, what does that feel? What does that feel like?
But never with an artist that I've been involved in. I mean, I still am so. I love music. My wife and I go to one new music festival a year, and I highly recommend Bottle Rock.
Okay.
So next year, I'm going to try the Pilgrim Festival.
Okay.
Outside of your town, outside of Memphis, I believe, in Franklin, Tennessee.
Well, yeah, that's like, you know, that's a couple hours, you know, on top of us, and if you come anywhere near there, you need to come here. You know that, right?
Well, I'm definitely going to the festival. I met the promoter, and he told me their intentions and what they do, and I've looked it up, and it looks like a great festival.
Okay.
So I do that, and I listen to a lot of new music. You know, as a parent, my wife and I did a thing with our two sons called My Month, Your Month. And what that was they didn't quite understand my taste in music, and I definitely didn't understand most of their taste in music. So we made a pact, my month, your month.
Nice.
Alternating months, my month, I get to take them to any concert I wanted to go to. So I remember the first one was The Who. I go, why are we seeing this? This is like, you know, this is geriatric rock.
Legendary.
They left the venue. They said, this is the most amazing show we've ever seen.
Nice.
And then the first one they took me to is, they said, we're going to see Kanye West. I said, you got to be kidding me. They go, no, it's our month. You're going to see Kanye. And I must tell you, it was one of the most exciting shows I've ever seen live.
Wow.
So it's all about the discovery.
Wow.
My discovery has always been about hearing bands.
Yes.
That have already signed that I didn't necessarily think were going to happen. The best example of that is for those out there that are fans of, I know everybody knows of, Bruce Springsteen.
Of course.
You have to understand that when he first burst onto the scene, I started as a publicist in the music business, and there was the most amazing publicist who I have ever seen.
Wow.
To then and since then. And what the coup was is Bruce Springsteen, who hadn't even been recognized on the West Coast. He was known in New York, New Jersey, up and down the East Coast, the East Coast.
Right.
And he was on the cover of Newsweek and Time Magazine.
Yes.
I want to say that again. He was on the cover of Newsweek and Time Magazine the exact same week.
Yes.
Unprecedented.
That never happened. That was not possible.
This is just the biggest hype I've ever seen. This guy can't be as good as that. And when he came to L.A. for his first show, he played a showcase at the Roxy Theater that was being simulcast by the FM station KLOS.
Yes.
One of the two. The two big ones were KLOS and KMET. And KLOS called me because I had a relationship with one of the DJs there. And they go, you want to go see this guy Springsteen at the Roxy? There's only 99 seats. I said, sure, I'll go.
Sure.
I want to see what this BS is about.
Wow.
And I took my wife and we went to see Springsteen, 99 people, and then it was simulcast. But 99 people seeing live. And I walked out of there and I said, I have just seen the God of Rock and Roll.
No.
And to this date, I have never gone. I've been offered. I have never gone to another Springsteen concert because that was such a remarkable event in my life that nothing can compare to it. And I don't want anything to.
You don't want to influence it and you don't want to mess it up in your head.
No, though my wife was recently in New York and she did see the Springsteen show. And she said, not only was it an amazing show, it was very much a spiritual.
Oh, wow. Just,
you got to go see it. So I might give in.
You might give in and actually...
But that's not a concert. That's not Clarence Clemens and the E Street Band.
No, that's a completely different deal. But that's just it.
Those are the excitements I've had. I've never really thought of anybody I didn't sign or we did sign. We had an interesting situation at Alive at one point.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we are always being brought artists. You know, labels will say, we're going to sign this artist. We need a management company that knows what they're doing.
Sure.
And we'd like to marry you with the early management company. And we were presented two artists almost simultaneously.
Okay.
One from Motown, and the artist was Rick James. And
nice.
the other label was Warner Brothers. Didn't mean we could sign it, but they wanted to introduce us. And the other label, Warner Brothers, wanted to introduce us to an artist, Prince.
Imagine that.
And we thought they were too close together, so we put our money on one of the artists and we put our money on Rick James. It was not a bad bet.
It wasn't.
He was a great artist. He did great. It's just interesting that those two came on the scene at the same time.
See, but that's just it. I mean, you know, Bob, you wound up seeing all of some crazy cool moments that wound up, you know, pretty much, you know, laying out the map of music history. You know what I mean? Like specific points in the dots. And I know that doesn't register with you in that manner. And I know it doesn't.
No.
You know?
You're right. It does not. It registers as just great experiences that I do. I swear to you. There are mornings or evenings I go and I pinch myself.
Yeah.
Is this really happening to me? Have I been this blessed?
Yeah.
That I have had this happen to me and I can experience this? This has never been anything I've ever dreamt of.
Wow. See, so you're still dreaming.
Every day.
See, now that gave me goosebumps.
I mean, tonight, I'm going to an event tonight.
Yeah.
And one of my favorite bands is before it's a charity event.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how they're going to, I'm sure they're going to be great because they're a great performance act. Morris Day and the Time.
Oh my goodness. Yes.
I just hope Jerome is there. For those of you that don't know what about Jerome, look up Morris Day and the Time / Jerome.
Love it.
Hopefully Jerome will be there.
Love it. That's going to be fantastic, you know.
I know.
My thing with you is, you know, more importantly, when all of that stuff was going on, all of those crazy cool shows that was going on with Rock and Roll Tonight, and, you know, all of these artists and you guys are putting them out there, and everybody, you know, there was an immediate impact. As soon as they were out, people were in love, you know, people bought albums, you know, all of this stuff. You just answered the question. I guess it didn't impact you in that manner. You know, did you realize what impact those artists were going to make, you know, on society at that time? Did you realize that?
No, I can't say I did or I didn't. I mean, you know, when we had, I think it was Graham Nash on one of the shows with Stephen Stills.
Yeah.
I mean, I knew what impact they had already made on society, you know?
Wow.
Because this was just a continuation of Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young. You just never know. I don't go in saying, hey, they're going to have an impact.
Right.
There used to be a situation at the Greek Theater, which is a lovely venue in L.A., and when I was young at going to high school, not every show sold out. And again, I didn't have a lot of money, but I loved music.
Sure.
And if the show didn't sell out for $1, let me repeat that, for $1, you go see the show.
Love it.
And I never remember, I do remember, I never forget, going to a summer show on this new band that had just come out of Woodstock, Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young.
And Young.
Opening was Joni Mitchell for $1.
Wow.
And to add for the spectacularness of it,
wow,
as Joni Mitchell was playing, everybody stopped and gasped and looked up, and there was this amazing meteor shower over the Greek theater.
Okay, that's magical.
These are moments that are magical moments.
That's magical.
You know?
That's absolutely magical. I do wonder, you know, just out of curiosity, when you talk about music, because these incredible moments that you're talking about was during a time when, you know, industry and platforms and business the way it was. Is there anything about, other than the concrete advice about the relationships and the concrete advice about not listening to anybody, you know, and rain on your parade, you know, and believe in what you got going on, the way the industry is now, the way the business is now, the way the platform is now, you know, is there other advice, you know, for anybody on that?
On the music side, I've got to be honest, I don't know, because I'm not that involved in it.
Sure.
I mean, I'm not involved at that echelon, you know. I look at concerts. I'm looking at a couple of concerts now that are already recorded.
Sure.
Maybe licensing and putting out on digitally and on DVD.
Sure.
But I'm not that involved in the business aspect, and I'm sure it's changed dramatically.
Right.
Dramatically. I mean, what I don't see anymore, maybe 20, 30 years from now, those people that are, you know, leading those labels will be venerated or recognized the way, you know, the Ahmet Erdogans, Joe Smiths.
Right.
You know, these are the people I got to deal with. You know, I bought my first label when I was at Rhino from a legendary nefarious character by the name of Morris Levy.
Yes.
And
oh, my God.
Negotiating to buy Roulette Records from Morris Levy was phenomenal.
That is crazy. And it's just phenomenal. Reading about him. I was reading about him.
Beyond having a checkered past, it was just a phenomenal experience. I don't see it today, but that doesn't mean it doesn't exist. I'm just not that close to it anymore.
Right. All of this said and done, and I know that you've got some engagements and stuff. And I promised you that would get you out, so you'd be on time.
I got a few more minutes.
Yeah. So you do like me.
I haven't come in yet to say we gotta go.
You do like me, man. This is good. Okay, good. No.
And by the way, if any of your listeners out there have any questions or comments or whatever, and I'm usually good at responding.
Good. Absolutely.
I'll give you an email.
Absolutely.
Now, slowly. Just B as in boy, MREMMER, at Shout Factory, one word, SHOUTFACTORY.com. Feel free to reach out.
That's fantastic. And see, that's what's so beautiful is that, you know, you everybody can reach you and everybody can talk to you, and you do talk with everybody.
But that's, I'm going to cut you short on the next question. I'll explain that.
Okay.
The reason I got my real job, not a college rep job, was because somebody that didn't know me but took my call and heard my plea for a job.
Oh.
Okay. Which was totally not the way you're supposed to go after looking for a job. But I was living with my wife at the time, not my wife, my girlfriend, my fiance.
Mm.
And she knew I was looking for a job, and I wasn't really that successful. A&M did not hire me. I was surprised. And she walked in and hurled the telephone book. For those of you out there that don't know what a telephone book is before, there was a thing called the internet where you got telephone numbers where they were listening to big book. And there was the yellow page. She hurled it at me. She said, "Start calling the record companies." I said, "That's not how it's done. You got to send the resume. I mean, this is what they teach you in school. You want to live with me? You want me to be nice to you? Try this out."
Fine.
And I open up the yellow pages, and the first label listed in the yellow pages under record companies would be ABC Dunhill, because that's ABCD. So I call ABC Dunhill. I was a journalism major. I asked for the publicity department. I say, "I'm looking for a job." And this guy, another unknown, I love him, Corb Donahue, extremely important to getting me a job in the business, said to me, "I don't have anything available. I don't know who you are. I think you sound very sincere about this. I would suggest you call Blue Thumb Records because they're looking for a head of publicity because they called me and asked me. I cannot recommend you. I don't know you. But call Sal Licata at Blue Thumb Records and see what happens. I called Sal Licata. I got an interview. I got the job.
Wow.
It's magical.
Wow.
Never didn't know me from Adam. And that's why I've always, since that day, made it a point to reach out and try to help people. I don't know who they are or what they are, but I just want to help.
You're so amazing. Are you, like, for real? Are you a real person?
Oh, please, don't do that to me. I'm not a real person. I'm just a person.
I love it. No, that's beautiful that there's somebody out there that still sees it that way. You know what I mean? You know, this business is crazy as it is. They need more people do. Yeah, the business is already weedy and crazy. You know what I mean?
It is, but that's what makes it interesting. I mean,
yeah, well, you're right.
When I was very young, or 2 days after, when I was getting tickets to go review shows, I took my wife to one of those shows. She was one of the girls I wanted to date.
Yeah.
And I took her to the Troubadour, which is a legendary club on the West Coast.
Nice.
Every Tuesday night was break-in night. And what that meant was the act that was going to play there for a week, they would have their first show, and journalists were invited down to review the show to break it in.
Wow.
So we went there, and two things happened that night. The first thing was, I heard this couple talking behind us, and I turned around, and it was a couple that must have been in their late 30s, early 40s. Remember, I'm 21 at the time.
Right, right.
22. And I looked at them, and I said, if that's ever me, you can shoot me. I never want to be in a... And my wife could have shot me many times over. But here I am at 67, and I'm still out there looking at these shows. So it's just, you just don't give up. You just keep going. And I said to her, I said, you know what? There's no such thing as a fountain of youth, but the closest thing to a fountain of youth that I think anybody can find in their lifetime is the vitality and the youthfulness that music can bring to their lives.
Yes. Perfect. That's absolutely perfect, you know, and I appreciate you saying that because, you know, we do the stuff that we do here as far as with the radio station, you know, and we do all the stuff with the shows and kids. And last night, you know, we actually, you know, because we now have put together, you know, a recording studio that's part of our radio station. And, you know, we had several of the kids in, you know, that were doing this. We had to lay down some tracks for these choir parts, you know, for some of these kids. And, you know, and it was okay. You guys meet each other. It's like, you know, getting the kids together for playtime. You know what I mean? It's like, this is so-and-so, this is so-and-so. By the end of it, everybody's friends, everybody's changing numbers, everybody's like, oh my God,
that's
we need
great.
To do dinner, you know.
That's great.
Yeah, and it was...
collaboration.
Yeah.
Anybody out there thinks that they got all the answers and they're the real deal and the only deal, they're kidding themselves.
You're right.
It's all about collaboration. The best music is usually written in collaboration. You know, it ain't McCartney and it ain't Lennon. It's McCartney and Lennon.
Perfect. Absolutely perfect. Thank you so much for the small time I had with you today.
My pleasure.
And, you know, if there's anything that I could possibly do or here at Radio Memphis that we can do for you, you know, please let me know.
You just keep doing what you're doing. You're doing a great service.
Thank you.
I just discovered a new station out here in L.A. that I'm in love with.
See?
88.5, and it's a college station.
See?
Run out of Cal State Northridge. It's just playing so much independent, fiercely different music that excites me.
Yes, it's good stuff. We're going to keep in touch because I need to, you know, I need to know what you've got going on and all that crazy coolness and stuff like
Anytime.
And of course,
my pleasure. Have a good day. Stay cool. It's exceedingly hot and humid here.
It is hot here too.
It is in most of the states. But just remember, there's no such thing as global warming.
Perfect. Well, I tell you what, you have fun with Morris Day. How about that?
I will, man. Jerome.
You're right. Enjoy yourself, honey. We'll talk.
The proceeding was produced by Pirate Radio Studios Incorporated and originally aired live on Radio Memphis. Any offers or advertisement contained may not still be valid. All rights are reserved and copyright is held by Pirate Radio Studios Incorporated, Memphis, Tennessee. For more, look for all the RMOD players at radio-memphis.com.